Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Whole Truth Podcast with myself, Jordan Stevens, aka
Rizzle.
Wow, you said Rizzle.
No, sorry, aka.
No, fair enough. No, it's not Alvin either. I've ditched that. Give me a random one now. Just what's my new name?
Five Man Stampede.
Brilliant.
Cranberry Necklace.
Cranberry Necklace. Oh, love Cranberry Necklace. All right. Welcome to the Whole Truth Podcast with me, Jordan Stevens, aka Five Man Stampede. Five Hand?
Five man
Stampede, aka Cranberry Necklace. Names that I've been gifted by my guest today, Disraeli, aka Rowan Sordo.
Hello.
It's nice to. Can I refer to you as your full government name? Is that okay?
I'm not used to you referring to me as that.
I never do.
I'm into that. You always call me Diz.
I always call you Diz. I'm very happy to have you on the podcast today because
it's very nice to be here.
I've known you for a long time and you're incredibly important to me in my career.
How long has it been?
Well, I would have been...
You were 15. 13?
13. Maybe even... 13. And what am I now? 27?
That's a long time.
14 years.
14 years.
That is long. So I'm going to give you the backstory now. So when I was living in Brighton, I was just a young boy with a dream. I was invited along to a youth centre. Shout out Audio Active,
shout
Brighton
out
Youth
Audio
Centre.
Active. Shout out Adam Julia.
Heinzie Hines. And it's Heinzie Hines actually who was working in the kitchen of or was just running. I think maybe a vegetarian burger restaurant.
Red Veg.
And overheard me talking to my mum about wanting to express myself lyrically.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. And he was like, "Why don't you just come down to this session?" And one of five mentors was yourself.
Yeah.
You were the first person to play me Eminem Infinite, and that
you
record,
heard how where I was sent from it.
Yeah,
for murdering instruments.
Wait, I got sent there for. I'm infinite. You heard the hell while I was sent from it. I was sent there for serving a sentence for murdering instruments.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to repent from it. Anyway, for those who don't know.
No, a lot better than I do, basically.
Eminem Infinite is his first proper album.
Yeah.
Pre-Dre. It was just in the three. What was his crew? The 313 or the 365?
Hey, you know all the stuff. I don't even
know. What do you mean? Well, you
I know
were just
that
me
song,
the lyric.
That song is like. It's brilliant.
Yeah, because
and the rest
you told
of the album
that to a 13-year-old.
Dull.
Yeah, but you told that to a 13-year-old boy who was wanting to be a rapper. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I went and did the work.
Yeah, you did the work.
But you did also write a play in rhyme called Bonfire Night, where I played
Danny.
I played a boy called Dan Boy.
Who
achieved fame at a young age and let it destroy him.
Yeah.
I was just looking for a reaction. Which is, I'd like to believe, an exaggerated version of the truth. But it's so near to the truth that it is... I felt like his energy was a little bit more of total... he was like, I'm Dan Boy.
Yeah, it was the showman. Well, every character in the play was based on the person playing the character. Right?
Yes, thank you.
So I came into the youth centre and spent a couple of weeks working with you guys quite closely and getting to know you a bit and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I wrote the characters based on
what I saw. Yeah, but that's because I never remember. I was having.
They were like magnified like mutations of the people that I met, because the idea being that you could inhabit the role that I made.
Yeah, of course. Shout out Sam Marion and Marissi,
AKA Barcode.
Barcode, yeah. Just doing loads of Brighton shout outs, basically. No, but I'm intrigued because I was asked this in an interview the other day about when someone asked me when I first started making music and when I decided that it wanted to be a thing. And I remember at my school I got voted most likely to be famous, but I never remember wanting to be. I never remember going like, "Oh, I'm going to grow up and be famous." Like,
yeah,
that's a bizarre thing.
What was the dream when you were a boy with a dream?
I don't know. Just to escape, to get out, to give someone. Me and my mum could not be in financial trouble. You know, and not be in debt the whole time.
Yeah.
But what was it that you saw? Sorry, we'll get on to you, by the way.
Let's talk about 100%, you.
No, in fact, I'll probably edit this out if I'm being really honest, but no, this is a good investigative piece for me.
Yeah. I guess you were already a showman. You were very sort of ebullient, is the word I'd use.
Like ebullient.
Ebullient.
That's a great word.
Bubbling up. You had a very bubbling up personality. It's a better word than bubbly, ebullient, because bubbly just implies like a bit vacuous.
And right, yeah.
Ebullient is like, God, you had fizz.
Oh, interesting.
And and you were stupidly confident. And also, you were really good at rapping, man. Let's not forget this. Like, it's not, do you know what I mean? I didn't just like come across a like precocious kid and be like, well, you're guaranteed to hit the big time.
Thanks.
It's like you were just really good at rapping.
I enjoy rapping. Is great. There is rap I love.
We did a song together when you were 15.
The Posse Cut.
It's really good. I listened back to it again the other day.
No, mate. Really, I'm imagining that's actually
you're
quite
15.
Sick.
Yeah. Like, give a crap about the managers.
Yeah, I know. Give me a year and I'll be. Oh, wait. I say in that lyric, I say, give me a year and I'll be followed by the cameras, isn't it? So something was trying to get there. I just wasn't conscious of it.
You were like, I'll be followed by the cameras, but I don't care.
I don't give a fuck. Yeah, I was like, I don't care
about the cameras, but I'm guaranteed to be. You know what I mean?
Oh, mate. Yeah, that was we were on that tune. I possibly got your, and you were my favourite verse by far, man. I remember you put like rap said Victoria Sponges. Wait, what a hell of a track. I must be what, the sixth of the chat. Oh, the best
of the rappers were sick and ill, like ripping the
head of a cat. The sickest
kidnappers that won't give your testicles back.
which is mean. Anyway, sorry, we are getting super sidetracked, but
it's gonna get a lot to get through.
You are a massive part of my history. I've always looked up to you as a rapper. And we did do that Posse Cut, and since then I watched you write more plays. You made an incredible album with your friend Baba Brinkman, who has gone on to also write massive scientific rapping rhyming plays.
He is
and win
a
awards.
Genre all of his own, exactly.
Yeah.
Theory of evolution in rap.
Wild.
The rap theory of
wild.
The rap guide to climate change.
Wild.
He's a deep guy, man. Academic.
And but also similarly seeing you with Disraeli and the Small Gods, just own it. Performance was phenomenal. You're just a great performer and a great lyricist and have incredible people around you. So yeah, big inspiration to me for a lot of my musical development, culminating in obviously I am constantly shifting and changing, but we did make a song last year, a couple of years ago.
You made two songs, mate.
I know. You know what? I listened to the other one the other day. Anyway, that's another story.
Is it good?
It's banging,
I heard it back.
It is great. Yeah. Oh, no, your verse is sick. But Light of Day, which with me, you, and Manifest, which was one of my favourite songs I've ever made. So, there we are. If you want to check that out, it's Al the Native, Light of Day. But you have also been making... You were in an interesting place when we made Light of Day, actually. I remember you distinctly coming into the studio and feeling a sense of relief. It almost, it was like you had been, you'd been like frustrated in a way by yourself. Let's just talk about that a little bit, because you've gone on to make this album, The Unmaster, which I got given an exclusive preview of and think is fantastic. But it's
haven't heard The Masters yet, though.
I know, mate, and I already think it's good, so there we are.
So I'm very excited about sharing with you.
Right, but
I was going to bring it down. I actually have it in my phone. I could play it to you.
What, the entire thing?
I could play it to you.
Wow. Well, just send me the link.
This isn't the moment, obviously.
Yeah, that would be a boring podcast for other people. Well, no, not really. I suppose if just you could play it on the podcast. Yeah, the headphones wouldn't work. But no, please explain to me what led you to create an album that is kind of just solely around your own desire to break free of yourself?
Really, really well put. I've never put it like that. But that is really well put. That is what it is. I mean, I was just very unhappy and not really functioning very well in my life. And so it came from a necessity, really, rather than it being like, now let me see, you know, what could I make a change to here?
Yeah.
It was more just like, something's got to change because I am
survival,
just like burrowing into some really dark places without any kind of volition on my part. So it was that, yeah, survival, I guess. I wouldn't say that I was ever suicidal. I certainly, for the first time in my life, understood how people could be. But yeah, I was pretty unhappy, man, fairly often. Pretty anxious and depressed, I'd say, having read things about those diagnoses since. I was never diagnosed myself as anything in particular, because I didn't go to the doctor, but I did go to a therapist, and I went on a mindfulness course as well, and also joined a men's circle. So I did a kind of like three-pronged get myself out of this whole effort, and the music was a part of that, really. Like you said, it was kind of like escape. How did you put it? Escaping from myself, or
breaking out of yourself?
Breaking out of myself. Yeah, myself being this tangle of ego and competitiveness and self-loathing and confused identity and pretense and craving. So when if we're talking about breaking out of myself, that was probably like what I was trying to break out of, is that kind of tangle of a combination of things. And yeah, it's a really good way to put it. I was in a flipping tangle and I couldn't really go left or right and had to seek help, I guess, is basically what it is. And it's funny because I still feel a sense of slight shame in saying that. I had to seek help. It makes me sound like, you know, a case or feel like that.
Why?
Well, I know it shouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, I know there's no shame in it at all. But it's interesting to me to reflect that I still feel a twinge when I say it, you know. I couldn't cope on my own. And I had to seek help. Because otherwise, who knows, you know.
Yeah.
And
you can, though.
What's that?
Who can cope on their own?
Well, I don't think any of us can.
No, really.
And this is one of the greatest lessons of this whole period for me, is our like inherent togetherness as beings. You know, we evolved in groups, we evolved together, we evolved as an organism, as a species, not as these like individual atoms of consumption and like self-definition that we like aspire to be now. So yeah, man, that's one thing that brought me to doing The Unmaster. In fact, it's hard to say that I came to doing The Unmaster, because it wasn't like I was suddenly at a new door marked Unmaster and I was like, now is the time to step through here, you know. This edifice of the album built around me as I worked away at breaking out of myself, as you say. Music making is something I did, is like a sort of byproduct of being alive for me. I have to do it.
Well, that's interesting because that's another, we look a lot on this podcast especially, and with the whole charity, we did an event, Music for Mental Health, which we're looking to continue. There's such an obvious, you know, or consistent, maybe is a better word, link between those two.
Yeah.
I'd really love you to, I mean, I know you say it's just what you got to do.
No, also, what one, like a really clear symptom for me of being unhappy and being, you know, unwell or whatever you want to call it, was that I couldn't make music and I couldn't listen to music. I couldn't be anywhere near music, actually. So one of the, when I say music for me, it's like a byproduct of being alive. Music for me is a byproduct of being, like, to some degree, healthily alive. Rather than not present and tangled up in myself and tangled up in all the shit we were talking about. Music. Yeah, I mean, my whole relationship with music has changed completely in the last 3 years. Completely. I mean, my relationship with music now is that it's a source of joy and something I need to do. My relationship with music 3 years ago, beginning of 2016, 3 years ago, was that was a source of, like, anxiety. It was a source of, like, evidence that I was a shit person. Especially, yeah, my own music was very much like, felt like a mirror of my worthlessness to me. Mm. And other people's music was evidence that everyone else was better than me and that I wasn't worthy of whatever attention or...
Where do you think that comes from?
I mean, it's just a reflection of where you're at in life, isn't it? I think as an artist, your relationship with your art is your relationship with yourself and the fact of your existence, right? So when your relationship with yourself... You think it's the other way around?
I'm asking now, do you think it's the other way around?
I think they just coexist. I think, like, the way you relate to your art is the way you relate to your creation, and your creation is your life. So for me personally, I shouldn't say this is my experience of it. My relationship with my life is the same as my relationship with my art. And that's another thing I realized as well, is like that we are acts of creation. And if we're not present to our lives, we can't be present to how we make. And what we make, therefore, won't be present to other people, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if you have some, like, connectivity with yourself and connectivity with your life, to me, like, the art will come, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. When you spoke about a sense of shame, saying that you needed help or a kind of... a barrier between you and potential diagnoses, which I kind of actually understand. When would you say was the first moment in your entire life where you were aware of mental health and aware of your responsibility to that? Is that actually only come about now, or were you aware of this as a boy? Or?
No, I mean, I definitely had. I have an aunt who has manic depression, and one of my best mates' dad was manic depressive and eventually died from it, was in and out of being sectioned, and it was definitely present in my life as a young person. I definitely felt like it wasn't something that would ever affect, like, that kind of turmoil was something that would ever touch me. I felt sort of well looked after, and I felt I felt stable, and like my mind was something I could trust.
Nice.
Whereas definitely when I was going through my rocky patch a couple of years ago, I stopped feeling like my mind was something I could trust.
I had that.
Yeah.
It's really
you
scary.
Had that too.
Yeah. I honestly remember my friend going through a tough time and saying, your brain isn't your friend. And I remember going, what? Like, are you joking? I said, your brain is your best friend. I was like, you can control anything, you know? But I obviously wasn't thinking that. Your emotional world, I don't think, is actually really anything to do with your brain. And it's not conscious. It just exists.
It's mad, isn't it? How much there's going on without your conscious control.
No, totally. Totally, because it was like, you know, for me, I don't know if this is the same for you, but it was like I had such overwhelming emotions that I couldn't think my way out of them. Mm. Whereas before, I could pretty much think my way out of them. You know what I mean? Or yeah. I could put up a barrier. But being sober and feeling that, or just not even sobriety, but not delving into an obvious desire to numb, you know, and having to sit with that, you realise that. And people kept telling me time. And at that point, I was like, what? Do you mean time? Like, how do I know? Like, give me a date. Like, when do I stop feeling like this? You know what I mean? Yeah, and there just isn't. And that's actually an amazing artist, Lex. I know you, Lex. Do you know Lexa Moore?
Yeah, she was on my show the other day.
Of course, man. Right. She said that, what, oh my God, I was outside so ass with her, right? They're just doing a poetry night, 6 weeks, shout out 6 weeks. And, you know, she's listening to me ramble. I was just on my proper, you know, like trying to intellectualise my feeling, you know, but this happened and that, and why is this not that, and da 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 da. And Lex was like, no, for real. Like, she's listening to it, even though I was like, probably saying some real questionable shit, you know. And she turned to me and was like, you know what? One day you're going to wake up and you'll feel better.
Yeah.
And she goes, I don't know when, but one day. I was like, that shit just stuck with me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
She's got such a quiet wisdom, hasn't she?
God, like, listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, you know, Lex, I'm sure she has her own stories around with this stuff, and I don't want to have to run to her whenever I feel away.
Tell me what to do.
I know. Right, okay, so yeah, I mean, I totally get that feeling, and that it's scary, isn't it, for your brain to suddenly go.
And a lesson in, like, in community and interdependence, like, we with our capacity to reason.
Yeah.
Each of us alone, like you said before, we can't cope alone, and we're not built to cope alone.
No, totally. We're literally not. Otherwise, it wouldn't take two people to make
a person.
Yeah.
That's mate. And I like that thing of talking about your conscious mind and your rational mind being able to. You can rationalise your way out or reason your way out of some kind of tangles, can't you? Like, you can reason your way to a kind of to a better mood, if you're kind of well. But then there comes a time when you just can't, and you can't clamber out.
Yeah, I don't think you ever do. That's what I've concluded. It's like the times when that was more, the times when I felt like that was a choice. I feel disconnected actually from my body.
It's exciting though to discover how many layers there are below what you are rationally aware of.
Yeah. And oh yeah, of course.
But what I mean is, like, what I used to be terrified of was how much there was that I couldn't control.
Yeah.
I thought as long as I'm in a position of mastery of my mind and of everything around me,
yeah,
then I'm cool. And actually for me, one of the deepest things was going to therapy and being with a very insightful therapist who could see the many layers going on behind each of my behaviors and stuff.
Literally.
And I was like, with each new layer, I was like, but also reassured. And it's like, there's so much you can't control. Like, you might as well just let go of the idea of control.
I couldn't stand it in those first 3 months of my therapist. I couldn't stand it. And she just, like, kept being like, well, what's that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, like, so I'm interested let's pause that you use the word...
let's just pause on that for a minute. You know, or they'll be like, am I reminding you of your mum? I'm like, well, now you've said it. And they're like, no, before. And I was like, can you just stop, you know? And it's like, well, it's just a bit...
Stop seeing into me?
I know. I don't think that during the time when I could rationalise, I think the happiness was, like you say, it was a sense of, I was like suspended. I felt like I was kind of like, and I'd look back to that time a lot after the kind of dam broke in my mind, like when the kind of like complete scaffolding, like quite obvious scaffolding, never a building, but scaffolding that was kind of keeping my emotions down or up, down, definitely. When that was broken through, and I was kind of like, "Oh God, I could actually feel, like, literally feel the bottom of my body." Then it became, those thoughts became obsolete. But as I was working through this fear and shame, that voice would, like, hound me, like, oh, remember when you were happy though? Happy being ignorant.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Happy being like, I didn't know any different, and I missed it. I missed it when I didn't know that I was being unconsciously driven by like my issues with authority or my fear of rejection. It's like,
but I don't think it doesn't discredit everything that came before, you know, because there's a sense that I can have sometimes of like, before I knew nothing and now I've started to wake up, you know, I've started to become a bit more aware of what's going on in all the layers beneath, and therefore my happiness is more real, or there can be, yeah, I feel like I can have a tendency to kind of discredit everything that came before, like the relationships I had before that and the friendships I had before that and the music I made before that, and I definitely feel more present to my life than I ever did before, but it was still living, you know.
Yeah,
and it was still joy, and I don't know. It's all, without every single millisecond of what you lived before, you wouldn't be sitting here.
100%.
Do you need to know? Or do you need to have this, or like this kind of oceanic awareness, in order to have real happiness?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
No.
In order
for
your happiness to be like substantial.
No, I don't think it's specific. Think so. It's specific, isn't it? It's like it's relative. It's not specific. It's relative. It's relative to everyone's experience, you know. Like if there's one thing,
I just want to clarify something here. When I say this oceanic awareness, I don't mean that I'm rolling around with this oceanic awareness, like some kind of flipping transcendental.
Although that is the dream.
Cloud
being.
That's
the dream.
I'm just saying, like, do you know what I mean? What I mean by that is there's an awareness that there is an ocean.
Yeah, no,
beneath
listen,
that kind
we get
of
what
surface.
You're saying. It's, yeah. And what I'd say, how I feel it is the most practically explained to someone, particularly in my context. You're blocking my light, bro. Thanks.
You're very aware.
There's the how I'd explain it in the context of me is that I feel like I'm better at surfing how I feel, like I'm just and that seems like I'll be heading towards something more blissful on the basis that I can confront things in life and confront being the operative part of that sentence.
What's the John Ruff? Is it
with
a John
little,
Ruskin
with a little amount of fear? Huh?
You can't.
It's fear. That's what I think it is for me.
Fear.
I feel like the blissful state is to accept fear. And so I think that can actually happen for anyone. So that's what I'd say to someone who...
When you say accept fear, do you mean will be afraid?
So I'd say that I think there's two different types of approaching fear, maybe. I mean, it sounds very binary, but I feel like, generally speaking, I'd say one is at such a state of avoidance that you're not even allowing yourself to process what happens, and so you're almost, it's almost like half of you is experiencing what's going on because you're just in this state of like whatever, you know, like kind of almost like, whereas I feel like there's another state where you're really aware and you're really scared
and
but you're actually
really
making
afraid.
A conscious choice,
yeah,
you know, but I don't know, like this is speculation, do you know what I mean? Well, I don't, what do we know?
I mean, we just know,
but I will, but
a little atom of what we know.
Yeah.
What you said about being present, you said something related to being present anyway, just boils down to that really, isn't it? It's like, how afraid are you, how aware are you of the shape of your fear and the shadows that it springs from? you know.
Real, that's real. Yo, listen, when I was in that bubbly phase, yeah.
No, brilliant.
When I was, before I had like a break, you know, an actual break as well. It wasn't even like ease. It was like a snap internally, which I've spoken about a lot on this because, you know, what else are we supposed to do other than spread teachings and teachings, just honesty, knowledge, all that.
Yeah.
My grand died like six years ago now. My Granny V, I love her, but I love both my grands. Granny V particularly is a lot of the reason why I'm a writer. She used to read poetry with me. And when she died, I just was like, oh, she was old. Do you know what I mean? And she died and I was like, oh, that makes sense. And she was old, she's really lovely. She's smiling until she died, you know, the dementia. Mm. She had dementia, I think, to an extent, but she remembered who I was. She could recite entire poems. It was gorgeous, you know. She was an incredible woman. But when I had this break, which was from a breakup, the first thing I cried about was her. And that's where I was like, that's when I've kind of, that's what I remember, that's what I remind myself of when I go, okay, cool, you felt as well, you'd mastered your emotions, even to the point of judgment on others who are feeling them too much, which is so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Like, you're talking about grief here, bro. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? We're talking, not talking about like, did we feel happy? Yeah, probably. Did that affect you a bit more? This is grief. Like, even if you're in a place of harmony and complete and utter bliss, of course I'm going to cry because my gran's gone.
Yeah,
that's like my... That's my like place of comfort as a little boy, you know, and I was ignoring that. I was ignoring me being sad that a comfort had gone for me.
Mm.
And that's, I think that spoke volumes about the difference between existing in your head, I suppose, and wanting to at least have a relationship with your body.
Yeah. It's what it boils down to, isn't it? It's and again, presence. Like, we are present through our body.
I always feel like we get more present when we cry.
Yeah, man. How good is crying?
No, I know. I don't do it.
Shouts out to all the weepy ones. Honestly, man.
I feel like
I've got really into crying recently.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't. I've struggled, and I'm such an advocate, obviously, but I actually really struggle.
That's really fucking good, man.
Mm.
I didn't cry for... I cried maybe, you know, like 3 or 4 times over the course of about 10 years, I'd say.
Before. Yeah, I feel you.
And I'm just like... Oh, just letting it out.
Get it out. Well, mate. Trauma, you know, trauma and like, and anger and sadness, it's in you. That's another thing. That's another, for those who are more left, have a more left brain approach to this, which is totally cool. It's not the idea of like, you know, processing trauma. It's not like a, it's not a theory. Yeah. Like it's literally inside it's you. Literally. Like you'll get dodgy knees if you.
Yeah.
Like, it's mad.
Yeah, The Body Keeps the Score. Good book.
What's it called?
Called The Body Keeps the Score. I haven't read it.
So what would you say has been your best period of mental well-being?
Now.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Because of...
No question.
Would you say this album, The Unmaster, has been almost like a mirror that you enjoyed? It's a nice mirror.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because you're saying before it was almost the mirror that caused you to make it. So did the mirror... How did that evolve?
The Unmaster... is really the whole, it kind of really reflects the whole process of collapse and recovery, I guess. And also the joy in like re-emerging.
Mm.
It's like, it's got a lot of joy in it, I'd say. In quite a dark way, it's kind of joy in the darkness, I guess. And it's got a lot of ebullience in it. It's got a lot of mad energy in it.
Ebullience.
Yeah.
I love that word.
It's a good word, isn't it? Ebullience, yeah. It's really, really fizzing with life in a way that nothing I've managed to make before does, because it's just like born of necessity and also born at the moment when I realised I could start pretending and let go of perfection and just like, just try. And try in letting go of effort.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And
when the best stuff comes,
that,
arguably.
It's just like, it's full of like rubble and brush strokes and like yells and strange noises and clangs and really fast beats with percussion on.
And you made all of it.
I made all of it, yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a tiny break away from talking about deep, integral, internal, interesting, intellectual, interchen stuff, and I'm gonna ask you two questions that are like usual.
Yeah.
What's your favourite colour?
Black at the moment.
It's not a colour. God, everyone, it's not
black
a colour.
Black is the colour.
Absence of light.
Of my true love's hair.
But what you'll find is that this is a colour because it's not true black, is it?
Yeah.
So it's full of colour.
It is true black.
But it is black.
It is true black. Why do you like black?
Because it doesn't look dirty when it's dirty.
Oh, that's a smart one.
Yeah. I can look relatively smart whilst also not washing.
Ah, that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah. You look disgusting.
I know. Well, the dark grey kind of does the job too, especially with this kind of
stonewashed
vibe.
Yeah,
stonewashed vibe. I look grubby anyway. What's your favourite shape?
My favourite shape? Spherical. Can I do that?
A sphere?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
Sounds deep, doesn't it?
No. It's like a ball.
Yeah.
You're like a ball. A side of the creative process that you went through.
Yeah.
Pre your total, I'd say, barrier with music, you know, like when you had it at arm's length, couldn't fuck with it.
Yeah.
Were there any artists, songs that soundtracked particularly momentous parts of your life that you can remember, an album that would take you right back to that moment?
I've got Kendrick Lamar in mind straight away.
Good choice.
Moments of Good Kid, Mad City, Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst is one of the best hip hop tracks ever written, in my opinion.
Promise that you will
sing about me. It's just like, it's perfect.
And also incredibly sung.
Yeah.
I don't think Kendrick ever gets enough
promise
credit.
Promise that you will.
No, but it's actually
he just comes right after the promise that you will.
No, but I don't think he gets enough credit for his melodies. He's an incredibly melodic artist.
Well, I mean, he's just like an explosion of
when the light goes on, down. Both. Oh, well, no. What's is it comfortable? Question? All right. Yes. How does it feel bearing your soul?
At first, when I first started to do the most bearing my soul stuff that I've done was when I first started to do the material from the theatre show, which is also based around the tracks from the album, but with extra spoken word bits. I mean, you've seen the show, so you know, but maybe you don't. And that is very, very raw, and literally quite a lot of it is excerpts from my diary or my morning pages, which is my morning practice.
You have a diary?
Yeah.
Oh, so jealous.
Mate, you just have to just go and buy an exercise book.
It's not the buying of it, it's the discipline.
Is it an exercise book or an...
Or a diary?
Is an exercise book when you have exercises given to you? Or is it... Do you know what I mean?
It's a book that you're supposed to do backflips on.
It's a book that's very heavy to pick up.
Yeah.
Basically, I have a diary, and so some of that was excerpts from my diary, and so that felt very, very raw and really, and also because I feel like it was, for me, it was like the beginning in general of me presenting myself as I actually am as a human as well to the world. I think it was like it was the dropping of the screen, and at that moment, I also went out and did a tour around the UK of people's living rooms and attics and stuff.
Yeah, I love that.
To raise money for the album. And there were small audiences of like 30 to 40 people. And it was me reading excerpts from my diary, just like sat in a chair with no lighting or mics or anything. And so that was scary at first. And then about, you know, a couple of gigs in, I just had a moment where you were seeing yourself from a distance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just going to try and reload myself. This is the story of me, according to me. Two or three gigs in, I felt I, two or three gigs in, I started to have these conversations with people who would come up to me after the show and were just like gushing story at me and sharing themselves in the most crazy deep way, and it, stories of insane struggle and difficulty. And I started to feel, and because it was all around the UK as well, it was like 13 different cities, I started to feel connected to, in my strangeness, in my darkness, I started to feel connected to other people through their strangeness, through their darkness. And it started to feel like such a gift, to be able to travel around sharing my deepest, darkest. And by the end of it, I was absolutely hollowed out emotionally, but also felt this sense of connection, and also the shame in talking about my the shame in talking about the dark stuff had kind of, you know, a lot of it had faded. And so now the process of talking about you know, the struggles or the vulnerable parts, the soft parts, I feel very fortunate to be able to do it, and it feels like an elaborate like form of therapy and like evacuation, basically. And also every time I do it, I meet someone and hear their story. It's like you were saying, people message you online and stuff, and people message me online saying that, you know, just the kind of that door being open and someone walking through it has changed their lives, you know. And I feel like I have purpose now in a way that I didn't feel before. I feel like what I'm doing and saying actually matters in a really real way to real humans, rather than being entertainment, you know. So it's the whole thing has been a blessing. I wouldn't change a moment of it. How you doing, man? You all right? You're looking coldy.
Me? Yeah, I'm a bit ill today.
Yeah.
Why? What have I got, like snot running out my nose?
No, you've just got like increasingly glassy eyes.
No, I know, it's tough, yeah. It's just because we're underground.
Yeah.
There's no fresh air for me. How sad. I live here, by the way.
Okay.
They don't let me out of this room.
Fair.
I kind of get fed crackers, and sometimes they bring in an exercise wheel. It's nice. We've got another incentive called Whole Hour.
Let's talk about it.
If you've got an hour, what are you doing for your mental health?
If I have an hour now?
If you have an hour for it, I mean, really, the dream is you assign an hour. Yeah. Amidst a technology orientated very busy day where you go, hold on,
wait a minute,
hold on, I'm gonna give an hour to myself.
Yes,
what are you gonna do?
I did it this morning.
What?
I went to Finsbury Park
and did
I
what?
Lay on my back under the trees and I noticed how the new leaves were coming out on the oak tree, the new spring leaves. And this is not something I do at all.
I feel like you do.
I went for a run and I was like, I'm running, I'm, you know what I mean, I'm conquering the park. And then I stopped for a breather at the top of a hill and was like, maybe I could just walk and lie down instead of run.
Yeah, it happens. That first kick is great though,
I talk
right?
A good talk, but I'm like, I'm missioning around working like an idiot, basically.
Do you know,
I give much better advice than I live.
If don't we all?
Yeah.
If you look at a tree, it calms your nervous system.
I'm into trees, man.
That's science.
Into them.
That's science. What's your favourite tree?
I don't know. I'm a city boy.
Do you like leaves?
I like the leaves. I like the leafy ones. here's the thing. Trees, right? Here's something that has changed the way I think about trees.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just the beginning of the way I think about trees changing.
Nice.
But someone described trees to me
before
the other
you branch
day.
Out.
Hey.
There's some comedy podcasts that I could be asked on, by the way.
I'm just like, it's just curveball after curveball.
I'm sorry.
How am I supposed to work like this?
Dude, tell me about the trees. I'm really into it. No, I actually am.
It's actually pretty, it better be
a good tree fact at this point, Robin.
It's not a tree fact. It's just a way of perceiving trees as the standing nation.
The standing people, man.
Your
mum used to say that.
Your mum used to say that.
Yeah. And I used to go hug them in Hampstead Heath.
Mate.
I know.
The standing people. Literally, like, this is a network of beings that coexist and are amongst us. They're not objects, man.
I went to Guyana. New Year's, where I'm from, where the my dad's where my grandparents are from on one side of me. Walking trees, bro.
What?
Exactly. I want to see shock in the room. Walking trees. No, seriously. They had marked...
I'm not laughing at the trees. I'm laughing at the whole sitch.
The tree, right, you got roots that drop off. No, they move forward, right? And then the entire tree moves. And then it's a walking tree. I don't know how else to say it. If people think I'm talking rubbish, look it up. They have like markers. And they were like, yeah. And it had moved like fucking 3 feet in like... 4 months, or maybe I'm exaggerating, maybe that's a year, but it fucking moved, bro.
Wow.
Anyway, Disraeli, we've spoken extensively, we could speak for loads of time more because I'm comfortable in your presence. Again, no offense to previous guests. I love your album. Everyone will love your album. That's
when's
not true.
When's this coming out?
It's not true. Not everyone will love your album.
Not everyone will love the
that's
album.
That's quite scary.
Some people
isn't
are going to hate it.
I wouldn't say hate. I think hate's great.
My mum,
my fear is indifference.
Isn't gonna like it. It's very fast and
you'd be surprised.
Got beats in.
You'll be surprised. Don't underestimate your mum. If there's one lesson here, it's don't underestimate your mum. My mum will like it so much it'll be annoying for me.
Okay, cool.
So Disraeli, what else you got coming up?
Well, let me tell you, I've got 2 singles from the Unmastered album already out.
Madness.
Madness is the first one.
And can anybody please explain?
Oi Oi is the second one.
That's it. Oi Oi!
Yeah.
Dun 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 dun. If you respect me at home and my music taste, then get it because I like it.
Yeah.
Oi Oi!
So Oi Oi is out. And then, so those two are already out. And then I've got a new single coming out June the 11th, which is called My Mama.
Nice.
And it is...
What is it about?
It's about my mama. I wrote it because...
What? It's about your mum?
Let me tell you.
Okay, sorry. It's confusing. Sorry. It's tough. Tough out here.
I actually wrote it specifically because my mum fell off a ladder and broke her pelvis in 3 places.
Why did you have to say that? It's ruined the comedy before.
I know, do you know what I mean? What a callous fuck. Man.
Fuck. Okay, well, anyway, right, wicked. So
what
my mum's coming out.
What a stone-hearted man.
I know.
My mum broke her pelvis in 3 places.
That's really shit.
And was in hospital for a long time and then in a wheelchair for a long time. And I wrote it as a get-well spell for her. And it's called My Mama. And it's also like a healing spell for the earth as well, because we are causing insane damage to our ability to survive as a species.
Yes, we are.
So it's also a letter to the earth.
What's your Instagram or Twitter so people can just keep track of your upcoming dates?
MC Disraeli. MCDIZRAELI.
Wicked, thank you.
That's
love.
What's going on. And ooh. Also, can I tell you a little bit about festivals this summer?
Well,
I'm playing all the festivals this summer.
Yeah, if you want. Wicked.
That's it.
I love that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.